This week on Barbell Shrugged, we interview Dr. Andy Galpin, PhD in bioenergetics, and we bust some physiology myths.
Hey, this is Rich Froning. You're listening to Barbell Shrugged. For the video version, go to barbellshrugged.com.
Welcome to Barbell Shrugged. I'm Mike Bletzer here with Doug Larson, Chris Moore, got CTB behind the camera. We are in sunny California.
God, it's glorious out here.
We're Huntington Beach. We're here actually for a business event that we're putting on. If you were wondering why we just hang out in California, if you want to know more about things we do with business events and stuff, if you're running a gym, you might want to run over to barbellbusiness.com, sign up for that. We have a guest here today, Dr. Andy Galpin.
Such a special guest.
You might know him from such shows as Barbell Shrugged.
Episode whatever.
He's on episode what?
19.
Episode 19.
And episode 91 with Boss Rutan, which was probably my favorite episode.
Oh, Boss Rutan was one of the funnest episodes we've ever done.
I wish I would have been there to see you get kicked in the balls.
But you weren't exactly featured on that show. The one that you were like, you were our sole guest, I missed. I was like super upset about it.
That's why it was so good.
Well, people, that actually made me upset. People were like, man, that was the best one you guys did. Yeah, I was like, I wasn't even there.
My feelings hurt, assholes.
And then you missed the Boss Rutan one, too.
I know. This is the first time we've all been on together.
First time.
We've known each other for how long now?
Well, Doug and I...
Don't count that shit. That's OG relationship.
We met in college in Oregon. 2001, probably.
People get bored.
13.
And then you gentlemen.
Hey, we like chicks and beer too? All right, we're buddies now.
No way, bro. That's actually a pretty awesome story about how Doug and I did meet.
Chicks and beer.
Here's the thing, real quick. We didn't bring Andy on just because he's a good friend of ours and he likes chicks and beer just like the rest of us.
And he's our brother and we love him.
He actually, he's a professor at Cal State Fullerton. You teach exercise science stuff, PhD in bioenergetics. You work with UFC fighters. You do a lot of research with those guys and teach them how to...
Hashtag legit.
How to not suck or how to be better. I mean, none of those guys suck.
No.
But you definitely help tweak their performance and all that kind of stuff. So, before you think, this is just going to be a bullshit show where
they just hang
out with their buddy.
It's going to be that.
You're going to get a lot of that because Andy's super cool.
But when we bullshit, we talk science.
But we're going to talk about some really solid stuff here. So, don't just tune out at this point. All right, now, how did Doug and Andy meet?
You telling it?
up to you.
You got the better perspective.
All right. So I'll give the maybe not get Doug divorced version.
No. No.
Okay. So Doug and I went to school together, did our undergrad, and we both played football together. But when you're a freshman football player, you're meeting 150 guys in a few days.
It's intense.
I didn't even meet him halfway through the season or more, maybe.
Dude, every year playing football, I only knew half the team.
Yeah, right.
At best.
So I actually had a job when I was an undergrad, I had to clean the dorms. So I would vacuum the dorms and stuff like that. And I was in one of the halls vacuuming in one of the top floors.
Oh, you got to tell this whole story.
And I look through the window. I think I told this at your wedding.
Probably.
Yeah, I think I did. So I look through the window and I see in one of the other dorms a window open. And I'm looking through the window and I can clearly see two people shaking hands.
but not with our hands.
But not with your hands, exactly. And I was like, huh. And I stared a couple extra seconds. So, I don't know, a week or
15, 16 minutes.
Yeah, right.
Did you just stared?
No one else was around. A week or something goes by, I'm not sure. And I was in that dorm cleaning that hall. And the door's open. And then Doug's standing there, and I was like, hey, I think we played football together, right? Who are you? I'm Doug. Hey, great. Wait a minute. Were you here last Wednesday, 3 o'clock?
I recognize your bare chest.
Yeah? Why? I was over there in that window. Oh.
I think that's
how it started, is I'm vacuuming, and I said, hey, were you here? And he said, yeah. And he said, yeah. I'm Doug. I'm like, hey, I'm Andy. That's great. Yeah.
He goes, were you having sex in here on Wednesday at like noon? I was like,
no, I was shaking hands.
Yeah,
shaking hands.
He goes, I saw you. I go, oh, no way. I'm Doug. Nice to meet you.
Yeah.
That's the greatest bromance ever told.
Yeah, and as the years go by, that story gets fuzzier and fuzzier. I can't remember some of those details.
You just got to start filling it in with things that are more interesting.
Basic idea.
Yeah.
And then, and then I think a few weeks or months later, we moved in together.
And that's so funny because then pretty much after you came to Memphis and started your studies for your master's degree.
Yeah, but we kind of came randomly.
Yeah, they didn't come together to University of Memphis.
No.
We just talk about having sex and then you talk about coming together. This is getting bad.
So it worked out, yeah.
No, I went and did my internship with the Colorado Rockies, and then you went and did your internship with Mark Verstegen
in Arizona,
and then I called you up after, because we ended up meeting Dr. Fry, one of the professors from the University of Memphis, when we were at an NCAA conference, and so we had both kind of had like a way we had developed a relationship with Dr. Fry, and so we had talked to him independently, and then after my internship was over, I called you up and I was like, "Hey, you going to graduate school?" And he goes, "Yeah, I'm going to Memphis." I said, "Fuck, me too."
I actually remember you got to keep this in mind. Doug and I lived together. We played football together. We're the same majors. We almost had every class together. So we literally spent almost every minute for 3 years.
Like your Menzies cycles aligned.
We moved to Europe.
You watch each other shaking hands with other people.
We moved to Europe together.
Yeah,
for
all
months.
This shit's true, right?
Yeah. And
you almost died in
so
Ukraine.
So when we graduated, it was sort of like, all right, bro, have fun. Like, it was a nice sort of time off. So months go by without really even speaking, and I get a phone call. I'm in like the middle of Wyoming driving to Memphis. I'm like, oh, Doug, hey, what's up, man? And then that's when that whole thing down. I was like, fuck, I'm in the middle of Wyoming right now going to Memphis. You got to be kidding me. Yeah. So, and then they put us in the same house together. And we were actually like, we requested to not live together because we're like, if we do that, we know how we are. I'm going to only meet you. Like, you're going to be the only friend. And likewise, so we need to branch out. So I moved in, and that's actually, I moved in with Corey Lonis, who was on a couple times with you guys.
Yeah, Dr. Corey Lonis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then you moved in.
We knew a lot of smart people.
And then actually that allowed you the space to move in with Doug.
So yeah, well, kind of. I mean, it allowed me a laundry room to live in for a while before I got a real room.
Dude, and then $200 a month. You couldn't pass it up.
$200 a month, I had a closet.
The laundry room closet.
And then I left Corey. Couldn't handle that bastard anymore. Canadians can't handle it.
No.
And had to move in with Chris.
Small doses.
Yeah, so I started working. Doing some shit. I can't remember now. Life's too good now. But I was doing some job, had a house, had extra room. I was like, fuck, who can I ask who's like my best buddy in the world to come in and live with me? So fucking Dr. Galvin moves in. We lived there for a couple of years, right?
I think a year.
A year?
Yeah.
It was the fucking best time in the world, man.
It was, that house was so awesome because you got to understand at that time, I was cutting weight.
Some fun parties there.
I was cutting weight for weightlifting national championships. And at the same time, Chris was actively gaining for powerlifting competitions. So picture you're in Memphis in summer with the hot ass, terrible weather. I am constantly freezing because I'm trying to lose all this weight.
You're spitting the cups and shit.
Yeah, and I'm just like, you know, a hot cup of creatine tea is like my fucking Friday night, like Vice Friday, right? And I got to watch this bastard every single night eat a whole bar of chocolate cooking and peanut butter and fire the whole thing down. And he's got 14 fans going on. And he's sweating like a pig. He just discovered Rock Band, so he's just all
fucking
over
drumming.
It. And I'm just sitting there shaking,
the funniest thing
freezing.
Ever was, I remember the story, man. It makes you laugh, right? I was sitting there eating. I told some shit, like, because I was super heavy at power. I was like 365 pounds or something. And I go, I looked over at him. I was like, yeah, man, you know, it's funny. I don't really know why I'm so big. I don't really eat that much. And like, while I'm saying I'm eating a fucking sweet potato pie out of the shell,
I'm
watching TV. Like, I ate half that fucking pie right there in front of this guy. Like, you know, I don't really eat that much. Eating a fucking whole pie by myself.
Oh, God.
And then the cheat meal, the best cheat meal was like a whole large cooking bar. Not like the shit you would buy
like
for your personal consumption.
Ones.
No,
yeah.
A big, huge, like 3-inch thick.
So you make cakes.
Dark, special dark chocolate Hershey's bar. You get, okay. Yeah, you make a cake out of it. I'd go get that and break off the huge chunks, like small little bricks, and just dig them through a trench of fucking peanut butter. Not organic, not natural, not any of that shit. No, like just sugary Jif peanut butter. And just slammed like a whole bar of that down.
And I'm eating like a can of tuna fish and 4 carrots and.
I'm like, man, weightlifting's so boring. Come on, man. Power lift.
It worked out, though.
So now you're helping train UFC fighters, and you're traveling around with them to their fights. You get to go to the UFC all the time, which is fucking awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty good. We had a really good relationship. We've had a lot of those guys came up a few years ago to get some baseline testing done. And it just worked out really well, sort of the feedback I gave them. And then the questions just sort of spurred from there on out from those guys. And we've just had a really good relationship. A lot of the guys I work with down here, Jake Ellenberger, I've been working with him for a long time. He's a great guy.
Mm-hmm.
Got in good with Ryan Parsons, who manages a lot of these guys, was one of Dan Henderson's original training partners.
That guy was all right.
Yeah, he's fantastic.
He came and hung out a little bit when we were doing the Boss episode.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and that's actually how Boss got me is boss has a product he wanted to get some testing done on. So Ryan was like, I got a guy that can do this stuff for you. So the boss called me.
So if you have an idea for a product, Dr. Andy Galpin might be able to test it.
And for the right money. Yeah.
Yeah, and do the research necessary for you to slap a label on it. Says this was researched at this school. And
so now we've been working with, I had the blast. You guys, this is so awesome. we got to work with, I work with Pat Cummings. If you guys know Pat, he fought a few fights ago, fought Daniel Cormier, who's probably the number two ranked guy in two divisions. And he fought him on 9 days' notice. This is pretty awesome. You can imagine now, this guy's been trying to get into the UFC for a few years. No one will fight him because he's too good. But the UFC says you only have four fights, so you can't get in. So he's like, he's sort of stuck in limbo. And then he gets a call, basically 9 days' notice, says, you want to fight? You're fighting the co-main event, and you're going to fight a guy who's an Olympian. And, you know, he's number one two divisions. And so that whole process was awesome. We're working with him. We've been working with Dennis Bermudez. Both of those guys fight. Pat and Dennis fight this weekend. So we head up there for that. But it's been really good because, you know, a lot of those guys, like a lot of your CrossFitters, they train so hard and they want so bad to do everything right. And they want to succeed. And the work
is there.
Effort's
not the problem.
It's not even close to the problem. But these guys had no perspective whatsoever on planning, on what's happening in the body. Mm-hmm. Nothing like that. It was just, how much harder can I go for 8 weeks?
Going by feel.
Well, all their training is based on the history of...
No, it's not going by feel.
More
is
better.
Because feel is mental weakness, Mike.
Oh, yeah.
Mental weakness.
Yeah,
if you're tired, you're not training hard enough.
That's a wrestling... That comes from, like, the wrestling backgrounds. You know, you got to train no matter what. Train as hard as you can or else you're a pussy.
If they train by feel, they'd probably be okay, actually. But they don't.
They're not.
They just go. And so from my perspective, where I came in was saying, okay, here's actually... You know, it was basic rudimentary. If you go hard 8 days in a row, we probably need to have at least a half day recovery. Can I get you there?
Let's start there.
Yeah, and just planning out, you got 8 weeks or you got 12 weeks. How can we put these things together to get you the least chance of injury? Because injury is so high with these guys. And how can we get you to perform at the right time? You guys know what it feels like to peak the day before, 2 days after. It's awful, right? It's the worst thing ever. You guys have all bombed.
What about like a month before, 2 months before? Like, fuck. I did my math for this on the back of a fucking napkin.
Yeah. I think I saw a video one time of Josh Koscheck going out to do some extra work after practice. A guy who's very talented and works super, super hard.
For
a
world championship,
Yeah, and someone came in, I think it was one of the strength coaches in the video, and says like, hey man, you know, more isn't always better. And he looked at him like, dude, I've been doing this a long fucking time. Trust me, more is better.
Well, what they forget too is like, more is better when you're 17. And 18, it's not, but you can get away with it. You know, you can be fine.
That's the right way to say it. You get away with it.
But
you don't feel the pain.
Exactly.
Yet.
When you're 25 even, which is young, but when you've been training really hard for 15 years, 25 gets old.
Yeah.
You know, 30. We need a little bit more, and now you got to balance. The best part is they show up, you know, I'm 175 pounds. I got to get to 145 in 4 weeks. Whew. And you got to train more.
Oy.
Awesome. So that's when it gets really hard. So it's been fun helping those guys a little bit along the way, and then getting to go to the fights is, of course, really, really fun.
So the first part of that is just teaching them to maybe reduce their training volume a little bit, and then you're also helping them with recovery aspects?
Yeah, so a lot of it, too, is nutrition. You guys know this, but
hot dogs and fucking energy drinks.
Yes, you'd be surprised on what their nutritional plans are. Sometimes it's no plan. A lot of times it's really bad information.
You know, they're just going off information they maybe heard from a guy or read out of a magazine.
Yeah, for Jake's last fight, he trained a lot in Glendale at the same camp that Ronda Rousey trains with her coach.
She's all right, isn't she?
And he's actually a really smart guy, Edmund. No, she's fantastic.
Would you let her punch you in the face for $100?
Actually, I've had her punch me really close to the face.
Oh.
Yeah.
Was that hot? Where,
where'd she punch
I
you?
Had a cup one. Everywhere. I had to move my head a lot of the way. But her coach was talking about how, you know, she got on this crazy plan where she wasn't eating on Sundays and she was eating one meal a day and all these things.
That's not a plan for athletes.
Now, keep in mind, this guy is not a nutritionist, and he's admitted, like, I know a lot about training boxing. I don't know shit about all these other things. But he's like, all I know is when she ate one meal a day, she trained like shit. She constantly got hurt. She constantly got injured. When she started eating again, she felt way better, and way better.
It's like the baseball pitcher who has a ritual before the game, like sacrificing chickens to Joe Boone shit. Well, I didn't do it. I threw slow. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying. I sacrificed a chicken. I threw a fucking 100-mile-an-hour fastball. That's
so
all I know.
A lot of the stuff with these guys, it's not like I'm giving them any revolutionarily, like, super secret, buy my 6-week diet plan. It's like, hey.
eat protein.
Right. Hey, do you think maybe if you packaged it that way, they might buy into it?
Well, that's what they do when they package.
Let's do that.
Well, I'll tell you, who's
well, you know what? Hey, don't worry, guys. In the Barbell Shrug shop, coming soon.
You know who's impressive?
Dr. Andy Gappin's going to write a book. We're come up with a very sensational name. So don't forget to check it out.
Well, what people don't realize is they want to know what these high-level guys are doing, and it's the very basics. And when you can get them from there, just the basics, they just
eat
so
real food.
Yeah.
Sleep when your body says you're tired. Sit down. Rest.
Oh, yeah.
Don't worry about shit during the day. It helps if you have a job that allows you to fight for a living. You don't have to fucking throw boxes at UPS distribution center all day. You know who impressed me? Johnny Bones Jones, his Instagram feed. That dude has some omelets that are so amazing looking. Understands that food's important. He gets has a chef to cook him real meal food. Maybe it starts with that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. If you're getting paid, I think if you're getting paid more than, six figures a year to be an athlete, getting a chef at that point is probably going to make you get to where you can make a million dollars a year.
Think of it financially. Yeah. How much longer can your cure last if you feed your body the way you probably should? Like, if you eat food every day and you get five more years of fighting out of it, that's probably worth the cost of that fucking chef.
And, I can tell you probably the thing that got me on board with these guys the most. They were actually, some of these guys were decent. Ryan Parsons is pretty good. Pat was pretty good. They're solid in nutrition. The first thing I actually explained to them was speed work.
Yeah.
And they were blown away. They were like, oh. And I was like, if you're getting tired, you're doing it wrong.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And they're really good because they're open to feedback. And they were like, oh, we've been doing this for 30 years and we never thought about that.
Right.
And we bring these guys to the lab. They're tremendous athletes all around.
That's awesome because most coaches go, hey, I've been doing this for 30 years. Fuck off.
Well, that's why I work with these guys is because they are like that.
Yeah.
I don't have the time. Like, I don't need to work with you guys. This is stuff I do on the side. I don't need that. And when I explained that stuff to them and I showed them the stuff in the lab and I showed them the test results and they're like, wow, we are slower than middle school girls.
You are. That's right.
I mean, we're strong as beasts and we just don't fatigue and our lungs are huge and whatnot. And they started implementing that, and we just saw huge 20% gains in performance of tests you can't fake, force plate stuff. Mm-hmm. You can't fake that.
Right.
You can't.
There's more force into the plate or there wasn't.
And they're like, wow, we're doing less, we're going faster, we feel better, we're training more often, and we're getting better. I'm like, it's not any revolutionary secret.
It's science.
It's the shit we teach
Turns out that, you measure shit and you figure shit out, you should use the data at hand to train.
Hey, I mean, I've been pulled in the same thing, studied. The right way to do things, and then I stumble across something that's supposed to be different.
Right.
And then I get sucked into it for a little bit, and then I go, whoa, 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 maybe I should apply these principles that apply to every human being.
And the planet, and the earth, and everything.
You know, things like periodization or something like that, and there you go.
Well, it's the shit that you write about in your blog and stuff. Like, it's really pretty simple.
Yeah,
it's not. We're not that much faster and bigger and stronger than we were thousands of years ago. Really,
yeah. People want to talk about undulating miles of periodization. I go, how many hours of sleep did you get last night? 4. Fucking go to bed.
Yeah, well, why are we talking about that?
Go to bed.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so before the show started, we were all bullshitting out here in the backyard.
Shocking.
It was like 2 hours of pregame for this episode of the podcast,
And we just started talking about different things. And we were like, oh, man, we should just turn this into a myth-busting episode.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know, I'll kick it off with one of the ones. And this really isn't a myth-buster, but people go, oh, I don't take creatine because I don't want to gain weight.
Oh.
Right?
Right after this break.
Okay. Oh. All right, we're going to take a break real quick, and then we're going to bust some myths.
This is Andrea Ager, and you're listening to Barbell Shrug. For the video version, go to barbellshrug.com.
Barbell Shrug is brought to you by you. To learn more about how you can support the show, go to barbellshrug.com and sign up for the newsletter.
I'm raising children here.
I won't fuck with this microphone all afternoon.
Herding cats.
Okay. Raising children.
Don't touch it, Chris. Don't touch it. Don't touch the fucking microphone. It'll fall off again. Don't touch it.
Talk with your mother.
Don't touch it.
All right. And we're back. All right. One thing I meant to mention is, we were talking to one of our guys that are on the team. He said that a lot of people are on our website and people are messaging him. We got like a little chat box on the website about some stuff, and he said that people aren't even aware of the stuff we have in our shop. So just so you know, we actually do have some educational courses and stuff in our shop. So if you go to barbellshrug.com, click that link, you can check that out. So I didn't know, we always tell people to go to the newsletter so that we can email you about that stuff, as well as the podcast and events we have going on. But if you don't do the whole newsletter thing,
product,
then go for the
10X
shop.
Your wiener in 12 weeks. Tell them about that product.
That's definitely in there.
I was going to jump in and comment about how I actually use a lot of your guys' products in my class, but if I'm more interested in hearing about this product.
Well, Andy.
Natasha's around here somewhere.
Yeah, your girlfriend is around here somewhere.
Yeah.
Your girlfriend, or should I say, the person who's referring to you as the guy who needs to fucking get off his ass and propose already.
Yeah, right.
I think we should go back to you using our courses in your class.
Yeah.
Copyright infringement, motherfucker.
I've actually been using...
I don't remember licensing that out to you.
Talk to this guy.
Oh, Doug's like, oh.
I use the...
Gave it away too easy.
In my upper level, senior graduate level program design class, I used the TechWad videos. So along with learning how to program designs, one of the things about program designs, designing programs is exercise choice.
Right.
And so the assignment is they have to watch one of the videos and they have to compare and contrast two similar type movements. So take a front squat. So compare and contrast a front squat with the cambered bar front squat. When's it better to use, give me a situation when it's better to use cambered bar, give me a situation when it's better to use this. And so they have to learn, this is better.
That's one thing they never teach you in fucking strength and conditioning
classes. Well, actually, that's what you're... Well, exactly what your videos do.
Why would you want to do something? That's the question.
Like, yeah.
You have to be able to answer the question. Why are you doing what you're doing? Well, I read it in Muscle Fitness, or I saw it in that fucking blog, or so-and-so does it. And
or
that guy's
Klokov
a great
did it.
Klokov did it!
I didn't learn any of that stuff in actual class.
Me neither.
In college or in graduate school. None of that.
That's what we do in our classes.
If your answer is, well, because you're supposed to, then fuck you, that's the wrong answer.
Well, that's what fucking irritated me about, I'm sure you guys saw the recent, I think Ripito wrote that episode about how basically colleges are fucking worthless now. And my response was, you haven't been to mine. You haven't been to my class yet.
It all depends on who the professor is.
He's talking majorities.
I mean, you know that once you reach tenure, all your classes go to shit. No, I'm just kidding. Now that all the tenured professors are out there like, that motherfucker. I'm just kidding.
Yeah. We use the max mobility in one of them, teach different screening tools, stuff. We use, I make Chris come in and talk at the end of my program design. They spent a semester learning about...
I drink a ball of scotch and come on your teaching class.
Yeah, they spent a semester learning about designing programs, and then Chris comes on at the end and tells them none of that shit matters. it's great.
It's fun.
Right before we went on our break, we were starting to talk about busting different myths, and you really want to talk about creatine.
Because I was talking about taking creatine for mental acuity. But also the big myth regarding creatine is people are like, oh, you know, I don't take it because I'm not trying to put on weight right now. I'm like,
supposed to cycle on and off, bro? How are you supposed to cycle off, bro?
You know, so easiest way to think about it is this. There are four macronutrients. Carbohydrate, fat, protein, alcohol, right?
Yeah.
Which we're drinking.
The easiest way to think about creatine is it is a fifth macronutrient. Okay, it's not right, but it makes you think of it that way. So I always ask students, do you cycle on and off protein? Do you cycle on and off fat? Then you don't need to cycle on and off creatine.
More substrate around is a good thing.
Yeah, carbohydrate causes you to store excess water.
Mm-hmm.
If creatine... Okay, let's talk biochemistry. Let's have an argument over it maybe. In the end of the day, it doesn't matter. Carbohydrate does the same thing, arguably more. So whether or not you're taking... It's such a bad understanding of what the purpose of creatine is.
What is the purpose of creatine?
A lot of people don't know what it is.
Yeah, so it's really effective for about everything. In fact, there's more work going on in creatine in Parkinson's patients, in cognitive function, in neurological disorders, than there are in strength, power, muscle building. People have stopped asking that question since we were asking that question 15 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, I asked it in eighth grade while I was taking creatine for the first time.
Yeah, it's that well known. We've just stopped asking questions. And the clinical significance of creatine supplementation is just, it's extraordinary. It's really, really promising
stuff. So it does wonders for mental acuity and for people who might have brain and neurological issues.
Yeah.
What about for strength?
I put creatine in the health portion of my classes for that reason.
The performance.
No, because we know the performance questions. It's
answered fucking 15, 20 years ago.
And we wrote a review on that in 2000.
Yeah.
we do, but everyone doesn't. Just state the obvious for a second and tell us what creatine is.
It's very, very, very effective.
It's dirt fucking cheap.
Yeah.
It's almost free.
So
we are going to get this out of him.
All right. So what does creatine do for performance athletes?
So the easiest way to think about it is the way that you make energy in your muscle. You make this molecule called ATP. Think of it this way. Whenever you break a bond, it gives off energy, right?
Like a relationship bond.
Yeah,
like
any bond. Doesn't matter. Bond. Doesn't matter. Yeah. It gives off energy, right?
Yeah, it does.
So there's this molecule called ATP. Most people have an idea what that is. It breaks apart, gives you energy. Creatine is very effective at resynthesizing ATP so you can re-break it and get more energy. It happens to be the easiest chemistry way to get it.
It allows you to fuck more shit up.
Yeah, so it allows you to make energy really, really, really fast. So for strength and power movements, it allows you to do a few more reps or at a little bit faster and more frequently. However,
if
wants
you
to
do
it
every session, you do it month to month and year to year, all of a sudden you've done 10 times more work.
It'll make you maximally strong and maximally fast for a few extra seconds. If you can go at max 100% full speed or max 100% full strength for a full 6 seconds, maybe it'll stretch it out to 7 or 8 seconds.
Yeah, so, or think of an example if you're going to do a lot of really heavy sets. So you're going to do 5 or 10 sets of one or two. Maybe it gets you another set, which is adding to cumulative work.
Yeah, I tell people it's not what you do in any one time. If today you're just X percent better, it's one little fucking sliver better because you took creatine.
Right. So
over the course of 5 years, you're fucking a beast.
So the majority of the research, again, years ago showed for strength and power development, it's very effective.
Right. So as an example of what you just said, if you're doing a 95% snatch every minute on the minute, maybe normally you could do 3 or 4 sets before you start missing number 5, missing number 6.
Yeah.
Well, maybe if you take creatine, you can hit number 5 and hit number 6, and then you miss 7, 8, 9.
Exactly.
So recovering in between repeated bouts of heavy or fast movements, it'll let you go for a little longer.
And here's
so snatch ladders, clean ladders for CrossFitters, that's a fucking awesome supplement.
Yeah, and it's actually what people don't appreciate about creatine is it's actually what they call an intracellular buffer.
That's
so it's actually going to... think of it this way. It's going to block the accumulation of acid. So it's actually very effective for endurance.
We're
going to
go down that route, too.
We can get
there. Do it. Go.
Route. Oh, we got to finish all the creatine benefits first,
This is the biggest
Doug.
Myth bust of all.
Yeah.
Hold on, Doug.
Okay. It's like a dual one right there. Okay. We can run down the muscle and the lactate one.
Okay, we'll do that.
Do it.
So what do you want to do, muscle or lactate?
Well, finish creatine.
Well, so here's the creatine. A lot of people assume that acid is causing fatigue, and it's just not. It's not how it happens, but it's not helpful. So actually, creatine works as a very good buffer for acid. So it's very good for a short anaerobic, 2-3 minute, a minute, 30 seconds as hard
so
as you're
can. Doing Fran.
Like yeah.
Creatine is going to help your Fran.
Yeah,
out.
And so that's the probably unappreciated aspect of it.
Yeah.
Especially the clinical stuff we also talked about.
So it helps. It helps with power output.
Yeah.
And it helps with mental acuity.
Yeah.
So if you're a CrossFitting rocket scientist, is there any downfall to taking creatine?
It's really, really cheap. It's really effective.
Okay.
And
no real side effects
no real
at all.
Risk.
So what's the negative side effects of creatine?
So the slide in my class that shows up says, here are all the negative side effects. You ready? Next slide. that's
and,
it.
And yet there are journalists that have written negative side effects, right?
I saw one in the British newspaper like 2 months ago.
Not scientists.
So journalists. Yeah, exactly. So here's the deal. And people always cite, I read this in the paper. I read this. Entire football team gets compartment syndrome, or it makes you blow. So let's talk.
By the way,
about what's happening.
It's 115 degrees outside, and we did way too much. That had nothing to do with it. It was the creatine, son of a.
Well, that
bitch. We gotta get our guys tough.
Or the entire football team is juicing, and that's way more likely to cause.
Well, they're all hungover.
It's not the creatine.
Yeah,
it's not the creatine.
Andy, let's answer this question. The practical thing for the audience. Okay, I should get powerful. I should extend my maximum power and all that shit. What should I do, coach? How much does that take? When? What's your expert opinion on dosage?
So the basic idea is somewhere in the neighborhood of 0.03 grams
that
per kilogram. It usually rounds out being about 3 grams to 5 grams for a 170-pound person, something in the neighborhood. I would never suggest calculating it. Just 3, 4, 5 grams.
What about 100 grams? Is that better, coach?
Yeah, take a scoop.
So most creatine bottles have a 5-gram scoop.
Yeah,
and if you take too much, what can happen?
Well,
what dangers lurk in our creatine bottles?
What do you mean by too much?
I mean, if you're
like
supposed to take
grams?
3 grams and you take 5, what's the worst thing that can happen?
No. They've actually done up to tenfold. It's not that big a deal.
Yeah,
I mean, if you go obnoxious,
probably shit your pants. I imagine.
I mean, you may not have heard this, but there's some speculation that creatine does cause a little bit of myostatin inhibition.
Oh, geez.
And don't even get me started.
Just real quick, but there's a theory that if you were to take up to 60 grams a day the day, like spaced out, that it would...
Let me tell you where that theory is not coming from. It's not coming from people that are measuring myostatin, and I can tell you that. Nobody that does that work is saying that. No.
Oh, man. I can't wait. I can't wait for the comments.
All right, so let's go down the buffering track.
Yeah.
So tell us about lactic acid and what's correct about that and what's not correct about that.
So almost nothing is correct about lactic acid. That is common acknowledged.
So what's the theory, first of all?
So
and then you can bust
can
it.
I,
tell us all about the bullshit
Let
first.
Me go back to 1880 or so, Germany.
1880s?
Let me tell you kids a story.
Oh, yeah. Shit.
I want to tell you guys how
I'm so
lactate,
glad it's going this far back.
So this is what happens when you drink scotch and you're a real science nerd. You learn, look these stuff up, and you end up buying paperbacks on Amazon for $3 that went out of publish 100 years ago. Anyways, the original work on lactate came from deer stags. So,
it's
a stag, yeah. They hunted. What they realized is when we kill a stag and it's been hunted, there's a lot more lactate in the muscle. All right, it's been sprinting for its life. Therefore, lactate must be causing fatigue.
And that's what
120 years later, we still have that same idea, even though 60 years of science has showed us quite the opposite. In fact, lactate is probably the single most preferred fuel source in your body. If I IV'd you right now, put glucose or sugar in one of your arms and put lactate in the other, your body would pick lactate as a fuel.
Mm.
Not only does it not cause fatigue, it's an incredibly powerful form of sugar. That's essentially what it is. It's one step away from sugar. And your body much prefers that. There's a guy just down the road, actually.
So how do we produce lactate?
Can you put all that in a pill for me? I'll take it.
Yeah.
Inject it in my arm.
So I'll make this real simple for you. Sugar is 6 carbons. When you go through this process called glycolysis or splitting sugar, it gets broke into 2 separate 3-carbon molecules. We call those pyruvate. Pyruvic acid. Remember this stuff?
Now, yeah. I remember when I was younger taking pyruvate for this reason, but then is that effective?
No.
Okay. Go.
Close. So now we're at 2-3-carbon molecules. We want to metabolize or break those bonds, like I talked about earlier, to get energy. Well, if I don't have enough oxygen to send these 3-carbon molecules down the road through metabolism, there's actually hydrogen floating around. And so I bind a hydrogen to that 3-carbon molecule. That is lactate. It's pyruvate with a hydrogen on it. That's all it is. So, in fact, what lactate is, it's a pyruvate that is held, because if you're not familiar, hydrogen is acid. That's what pH, potential hydrogen, right? So lactate actually is pyruvate that is holding on to acid. It's stopping you from becoming acidic. So the more lactate you have, the more you are stopping yourself from becoming acidic. That's the point.
It's capturing it.
And so the easy way to think about it is, and I ask my students, okay, so if you could think of one thing in the world, you had all this H plus floating around, what do you think of that binds really well, and you don't have to know chemistry to know this answer, what binds really well to hydrogen?
Oxygen.
And makes?
Water.
Water. Mm-hmm. Fantastic. So now I've got pyruvate with a hydrogen attached to it, and I want to get back to pyruvate because pyruvate's sugar, right? Think of it that way. What am I going to do? I'm going to take a big, huge, deep breath and bring in
oxygen.
Right. Fantastic. I'll bind that oxygen to that hydrogen. I make water, and then I send my pyruvate through as in metabolism. So lactate actually is a fuel. It gets sent to your heart, actually. It gets sent to other muscle. It gets sent to the liver. It's a fuel, and it's blocking you from becoming acidic. Mm-hmm. It's tremendously important. Why the mistake? Is there a correlation between fatigue and lactate? Of course.
I was laughing because some asshole killed a deer and came up with this whole thing that we all just buy as undisputable fucking training truth.
Well, you know how I learned this lesson? Actually, fun story. During my doctorate, we had to take our comprehensive exams, and one of the guys on my list was a guy named Per Tesh, who's one of these original researchers, right? Did bodybuilding, fiber typing years ago. Mm-hmm. And his question was, you have 8 hours, tell me about lactate. And I was like, okay, filled like 30 minutes. And I was done. And I got a huge lecture for him about all this stuff and go back and find this. You don't understand lactate. Yeah. You're going to have a doctorate in bioenergetics. You don't understand this single most misunderstood ion or enzyme.
Mm-hmm.
Boom. Well, lesson learned.
So go back and read.
So instead of calling it lactic acidosis or whatever, a lot of people call it metabolic acidosis because it's more technically correct. So when people discuss doing lactate intervals or something like that where that uses that term, like, what's the correct way to talk about all that? How do you use it when you're talking to athletes?
Well, here's the easy way to think about it. In the end, it doesn't matter. Call it whatever you want. As long as you're communicating what you want your athlete to do, it doesn't really matter if you have the right terminology. So you can call it lactate. It's the same thing, putting yourself in a state of really high lactate. Mm. Well, that's actually happening. It's just not the cause of fatigue. So call it lactate. Mm. That's why I always laugh when people call it Metcon, right? That's the CrossFit term.
Metabolic.
I always want to respond, can you explain to me a type of conditioning that's not metabolic? It's all metabolic conditioning.
Just might be a different metabolic pathway.
Yeah, and
but they're usually referring
cool,
to
Andy, okay. It sounds fucking cool.
It's not
and that's
even
why
a different.
Like it.
It's not even a different pathway. It's
you know,
the same
you don't have
one.
To have evidence for everything, Andy. Yeah, okay, right? Not everything has to be in your fucking scientific ivory tower. We like the word Metcon, dude. We like the fucking word Metcon, okay? And wad.
I don't
we like to blow our wad. Okay, is that so bad? Is that fucking bad with you?
I don't jazz people back. It doesn't matter. Like, again, as long as you're communicating with your athlete, it doesn't matter.
So what's causing the fatigue?
So that's a great question. We have no idea. There's some ideas.
That's a sign of somebody who's telling you the truth.
Yeah.
When you ask them a question, they go, I don't know.
Well, we certainly know this. Enzymes, those are the things that make energy. They don't work when they're in really acidic environments. Great example. You guys make guac, right? Of course, there's some right over there.
Oh, God.
You take your avocado, you cut it in half, open it up, right? And it's what's the main macronutrient in avocados?
Fat.
Fat. Okay,
delicious,
what happens?
Fucking delicious fat.
Yeah. What happens when you put oxygen around fat?
Oxidation.
Same thing happens in here. That's happening on the avocado. It's literally the same process. It's being oxidized. It's radical oxidant. It's oxidative stress. That's all the same word. Okay. So what do you do to make your guacamole not turn brown?
Pour delicious lime acid. Juice all over that shit, homie.
And what's lime juice?
Citric acid.
Enzymes don't work in acid. So if I put your muscle in acid, it doesn't metabolize your fat. If I put your guacamole in acid, it doesn't metabolize that fat either. It's literally the same thing.
So how do we metabolize fat? What's the most effective way to metabolize
fat? So I shouldn't inject lemon juice.
You should inject lemon juice. I actually get asked that question a lot. What if I drink lemon juice all day? I'm like, fantastic. It doesn't.
What's wrong with you? What's wrong with you, kid?
I don't care.
Oh, you're a weirdo, man.
Just eat it. It doesn't matter. So you're not the... And so what's causing fatigue is the question. Acidosis does not help.
Right. I was thinking, Dr. Andy said never eat citrus fruit.
Right, there are other things that, with the way that the muscle works. So remember that ATP molecule I told you? There's a thing that suggests that maybe that phosphate, so it gets broken into ATP, which is trisphosphate, into diphosphate, and one more phosphate. There's an idea that that one additional phosphate, or energetic phosphate, causes fatigue. There's a bunch of ideas, but the real answer is we really, really don't know what's exactly happening. There's an idea that it's actually central. So the neurological system is shutting you down before muscle actually wants to shut down.
Protection.
Yeah, whatever.
Would that be, you know, what people call CNS fatigue?
Oh, my God. Don't get me... That's a worse one than lactate.
We're going...
Oh, my God, another myth.
Let's do it.
No, go right into it.
I was throwing it at you. Go for it.
Yeah, no, it's... there is no question that the neurological system can sort of get overwhelmed and shut down.
What is CNS fatigue? Explain that briefly. Like, what do people think it is?
So the basic idea
before
is...
Before we bust it, we got to say what it is.
That the central nervous system can be trained independently.
What's the central nervous system?
So that would be basically your brain.
What is your brain?
The spinal cord and the spinal cord and your brainstem.
Your nerves run into your muscles and tell them what to do.
Now, it gets frustrating sometimes when people come to me and go, "Oh, I was experiencing too much CNS fatigue."
Yeah.
And I go,
"That's because they read that shit on a blog."
I'm like, I saw what you did for training. You didn't suffer from CNS fatigue.
No. If you were in nature, you'd be fucking dead in 2 seconds
exactly.
And would be through with you. Evolution would take you out with that
and
talk.
There's no question that the spine and the brain will sort of fatigue in that fashion. But muscles getting a whole lot of fatigue there too. The basic idea that irritates me is people think you can train your spinal cord or your brain to fatigue, but your muscle's completely fine. And that those things can be trained independently. That there's a central nerve. It's not my muscle, it's my central nervous system. Wow, take intro physiology class. There is no central nervous system training that trains muscle differently than it trains central nervous system. You got fatigued, fantastic. There's no difference there. It's one of those things I just go roll my eyes when coaches say it. As long as you're communicating the right message, I don't care if you understand the physiology, if you're programming.
It does make me wonder sometimes whether coaches are using that terminology to explain
absolutely.
To athletes, knowing that it's not the exact right thing.
Well, they probably don't, but who cares?
It sounds sexy, and I guess as long as they get it, no harm, no foul.
No, I mean, you get the idea of and I won't mention a name here, but a friend of ours I remember one day was like, it was an off day. And he was like, I'm just going to do a bunch of really heavy deadlifts. Just train the central nervous system so my muscle's fine tomorrow. And I was like, whoa.
Repeat that.
You do heavy deadlifts so you don't train your muscles?
No. That is not how it works.
Have you deadlifted before?
Yeah. Yeah, that is not how it works.
I usually get really sore.
Yeah, that's not there. And then the other one was the muscle.
Yeah, it's
muscle
talk about that. We don't know why people get tired. Is it because we're too fucking jacked, Andy?
Well, this happens a lot with MMA fighters and boxers. And they actually believed it at one time with baseball players, and that's, you know.
It sounds like the muscle-bound argument.
Like, if you look,
it's out of that asinine.
All you gotta do is go back to, the 70s and 80s, and baseball players want to lift weights, and the coaches are like, no, you'll get too muscle-bound, but Barry Bonds fucking nails home runs. And
why are steroids important?
Why would you even do it to hit dingers?
Why would you want it?
It's the fatigue thing that Doug and I were talking about earlier, that the idea that if you get too much muscle, well, you're going to get tired faster. And, that's such, a very bad understanding of how physiology works on any level. The idea that having too much muscle is bad. What'd you say earlier? Really? Watch the CrossFit games.
Yeah. Those dudes are buff as shit, and they have amazing work capacity, and they're mobile.
Yeah.
They're shooting holes in all those arguments. Like, I feel like people watch MMA, and they see, this one dude who happens to be buff, and he happens also to be out of shape, and then they say because he has muscle, he's out of shape.
One fucking guy bench presses too much before a fight and ruins it for everybody.
I'll give you a great example. Jake Ellenberger, one of the guys I work closest with. Mm-hmm. He is, his biggest professional issue is you know, he gets a little bit tired. He's had some fatigue issues, and he's really, really, really muscular. Mm-hmm. He's unbelievably powerful. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, man, all this muscle. Like, man, you just don't get it. We were talking earlier. I'll give you three arguments on this. Number one, just look at the athletes. Look at a George St. Pierre. Look at a Sean Sherk. Mm-hmm. Arguably two of the fittest
Sean
guys.
Sean Sherk is like the jackest dude.
They're so unbelievably jacked, but they never get tired because they train that way, because they're genetically different that way.
Bob Sapp gets tired because he's huge, because he's just huge. He doesn't fucking work out.
And he doesn't train.
Conditioning.
Yeah, he doesn't train.
You can be strong as shit and muscular, but also do your conditioning,
The
man.
Problem is these guys are big and they fatigue quickly because all their training goes towards getting big. And none of it has to do with endurance.
That's the fucking problem.
That's the problem.
Training is imbalanced.
And you think of it this way. So without making math too crazy, take an athlete who's 6'5", right? And they're 200 pounds.
Asia Barto. Well, he's heavier than that.
6'5", 200. So say they have 150 pounds of muscle on their body, just to make numbers easy. Now if I take somebody, instead of making him 6'5", make them 5'8", put the same numbers on them, they both still have 150 pounds of muscle. But why is it we look at the 5'5" guy and, oh, you're too muscle bound, you're going to get tired? He's got the same amount of muscle as that guy. He's just distributed differently.
He's just harder to take down.
Yeah, like it doesn't make any sense. In addition, the last comment I'll make on that is, any idea where at in your body metabolism or the way that you produce energy, do you know where that physically happens at?
I'm going to guess the muscles.
It's in muscle, yeah. So if you want to produce some energy, you need muscle mass.
And plus, it still does that force stuff.
Well, you get the argument, well, look at the endurance athletes. You never see a super buff endurance athlete.
They train like shit.
They also run a bajillion hours a week, well, and they don't eat, and they don't train, and they're genetically really, really good at that.
None of them are strength training for hours on end every week. They touch it a little bit.
And you have a nature-nurture issue there where the really high-level ones are really good at that because they've been built to have a certain mass to tendon stiffness ratio. You know, they're able to produce a whole lot of force with very little energy to get there. So it's just a really silly argument.
Wait, how does that work? That's something we don't talk about very much on the show at all.
Yeah, so
we do talk about stiffness, actually, just not tendon stiffness.
I'm so stiff right now.
This is one of the issues we worked with the UFC guys on a lot.
Yeah, we don't talk about Snap to give you a Mark Verstegen.
Yeah, right? Pop Bank, yeah, whatever he does. The issue is there's a lot of ways to produce. So in my lab, we study muscle at the single cell level. So we pull one muscle fiber. We take a biopsy. In fact, I've taken a biopsy of Mike.
Your first muscle biopsy.
How was his touch? Was his touch gentle?
Well, his tissue resembled something of an older woman. Something like that. But we take
He had to take two out because he didn't get the first one in. I was like, no, Andy, you got to push more this way.
No, I remember the needle's like halfway in, and I'm like, I think I'm there. And he's like, you're not in. And I'm like,
I can feel how it's supposed to feel.
I've been waiting for you to tell me that I'm in.
Because it's that weird like pressure, like, not a pain, but like, oh God, what is that?
And I remember for some reason I'm looking at his face and not looking at his leg, that I'm jamming this gigantic needle
as you
in.
Go satisfying, and he's like, last push into the hole.
You're not in. All right.
Clomp, snap in, get the fuck out.
But we study muscle at one cell at a time.
Petted him after. Is it okay? You want to try again? Or?
So we publish all this research on what happens on one cell at a time, and then people make these extrapolations to whole muscle performance. Right. And we're like, whoa. Like, there's a lot more in muscle than one cell. There's the connective tissue. There's the connective tissue around the entire muscle. There's the tendon and ligament. And one of the things that we do with the MMA guys is we try to test and tease out their muscle force versus their tendon and elastic response, because they're different. So somebody can be really, really strong, but poor elastic. I'll give you an easy example of how we do that. Mm-hmm. So I'll make them do a vertical jump from a static squat position. So I'm going to take the tendon and elastic component out of it. No counter movement. Start from a half squat straight up. And then they get to do a counter movement. They get a dip and drive. And then I make them do the same thing off of a box. In fact, I got this from old...
this is my researcher Shaz is doing.
Yeah, old stuff from Bud Charniga.
Yeah.
His old translated stuff on their numbers. Oh, yeah. And the old Russians, what the numbers should be. And we use that, and so you jump off of a box, and now we're looking at how you land and go back up. So now it's really elastically driven. And we want to look at, and shocking enough, a lot of these guys produced a tremendous amount of force, jumped really, really high from a static position. But when I had them give a counter movement, they didn't jump any higher. Which you should jump higher. And so my immediate reaction is, we got to work on more reactive, explosive stuff.
That's my weakness, too. I can sit down the bottom, like on a low box, and jump, and then not really jump that much better. You know, yeah. That's why it's one of the things that it'll make me perform better, is just doing more of the reversing.
And how funny it is, my whole life, so I was a competitive weightlifter, and my always sort of joke was me is, if I couldn't front squat something, I would just clean it and then try to front squat it.
Yeah.
Because I could clean almost as much.
I tell people that sometimes. I'm like, yeah, I actually know a guy that can clean more than he can front squat. And they're like,
and it took
power clean or clean? I was like, clean.
Yeah. It took this dumb giraffe years to figure out, like, when I was working with these guys actually, and I went, maybe I should do some more pause squatting because I am very bad at producing force. I rely entirely on my elastic response.
That's why box squatting is good too.
Exactly. And so now I started doing that stuff and wow, the gap got much better. But that's how we use sort of the idea that there's a lot of things producing force that are outside.
Your mommy, the research, I used to, like, that's the last time I did research was.
But it's how you can use research and science to actually help performance a little bit. So some of these we had them doing a little bit more, and we're just talking not like a 24-inch box jump, you know, like off of a 4-inch or 6-inch thing, landing and going. Mm-hmm. And in their sport, it's sort of like, okay, imagine a guy's pressing you in the cage. You got to back up a few steps and then lunge back at him. You can't do that right now because you get sort of stuck in the hole.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You got no elastic. We did that, and now their lives, I mean,
the
a week.
Speed is really important. Like when I did my thesis, one thing I did, I borrowed Louis Simmons weight releasers. I went up there and trained for a week. I said, hey, dude, I'm doing my thesis. You mind if I take your equipment out of here and just never come back? That's the kind of guy, that's why anybody talks shit about Lou, I go, look, okay, you can have your ideas, but the guy is so kind. Like, he just let me take his shit and go back to Memphis. Did a study where we did jump squats. So you lowered a certain percentage of your max. These weight releases would hit the ground, and the weight pops off the barbell, and you just fucking jump. We had this awesome thing. I wrote a little thing, and I got money from the NSCA wearing a T-shirt. God bless those guys. What the fuck are they doing now? They gave me a couple grand. I bought a...
Getting sued.
What was that thing?
Oh, shit, right?
What was that thing we bought?
Oh, Andy? I've been in some fun meetings with the NSCA.
What was that thing we bought? It's a barbell suspended in an apparatus where if you let go of the barbell, the circuit opens.
Catches the bar.
The thing catches the bar, so you can jump with weight and land with your body weight. It's really cool. Mm-hmm. What we found is it didn't matter how much weight you added to the bar. We thought, well, these things, people use this shit. What's going on? You lower the weight, it kicks off, and you jump. But really, that didn't matter. What mattered was the speed at which you lower. You get down quicker to stretch things.
And that's the part that irritates me. Whenever I work with my students that are coaches or other coaches, they're like, well, you know, we just did this actually. I had a John Cronin from New Zealand up in our lab.
I almost went to work with him, man.
Yeah, and he had visited Cal, and he went to Stanford and all these other places. Then he came down to us, and he was like, you guys are the first people that actually are actually using any semblance of science. Because he went up there, and he's like, the coaches were like, well, you know, we're coaches. We're not researchers. We don't read that shit.
Bullshit, dude.
And he was like, and I was like, well, this is how we're doing it. We're trying to, you know, and there's tough, and you can't be both for sure, but you can't just pass off the researchers. Wow, this is, ugh, they don't know what the fuck. They're all the researchers, boy, they've never lifted before. They don't know. Like, yes, we have. We're trying to do shit.
Like I was barking about, hey, you know, get out there with your lactate and your goddamn central nervous system fatigue. Like that's what they go do. Like, it'd be helpful if you learn the evidence. It'd be very good for you if you learn something.
I mean, you gotta let the evidence build up over time too.
Absolutely.
The other mistake, because the other side of the coin is people find one study. And they, you know, that one, like, you're looking at that one cell or something and extrapolate it out to the entire human body.
Yeah,
so on and so forth. So there's got to be that happy medium.
No.
It's good to look at the research. You know, if there's been 60 studies done on this thing and all in agreement and, you know, it's been peer-reviewed and all that, then that's good. But, you know, but on the flip side, you know, people take single studies, take it way too far. So there's got to be, you've got to be smart about how you read. Right. You know,
it's the edifice. The edifice. You got to wait for a wall to be built of information before you can really make. And you exactly. You take one thing, you get, okay, maybe there's something here, but you wait until there's really. But then you still have to be very, very, very careful about taking a basic single cell or whatever oxidative stress and applying it to the human condition. There's a big, big, big jump there.
Well, also, if you're not a researcher, but you are very experienced and you understand research, then you don't necessarily have to read the part of the research where they're interpreting the data. Not that you can't read it, but you don't necessarily have to read it. You can read like the methods and the results and look at the data, and then with your own experience and intelligence, you can interpret the data however you see fit. You say, oh, I understand why that happened like that. Oh, that makes sense about what I've been doing, what I've seen
time,
in the world.
Read the methods
if you only have a little method, don't read the abstract conclusion.
You have to look at the actual data. You don't just read the abstract, and you don't just look at what the researcher wrote as the conclusion. Mm-hmm. You have to do it yourself if you really want to know what's going on.
Yeah, that conclusion might have some bias.
I published a paper 3 or 4 years ago called Guiding Coaches Through Science.
Yeah.
And it was for coaches. And the idea was that.
You're like Carl Sagan.
Can we get that? Can we get that link? We need to have that linked off of our blog.
We'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah, put in the show notes on the website.
You know what? My first piece of advice: what to do with the introduction? Throw it away. Don't read it. It's not information. Methods.
It's what you do so you can start talking about what matters. Yeah. You got to do this awkward rambling.
You're trying to sell.
You pick 10 random articles, you reference them, you throw something together that works. Yeah. You're trying to.
Well, for us, it's grant money. We're trying to convince people to fund our work.
Yeah.
So it's not for you guys to read.
Don't read the intro.
If you are brand new and you don't know shit about that paper, then you can read the intro because it'll fill you in. But if you're experienced and you already have a lot of intelligence about that area, then you can probably skip it.
But be careful because the intro is guided. I'm trying to convince you why you should read my paper. I'm not giving you like the full unabashed, here's all the stuff, here's the pro. Yeah. I'm giving you like
It's not unbiased.
It's a sales pitch.
Yeah.
It's a sales pitch.
It's selective referencing.
Read the methods, and there are certain parts you just throw out, don't read. Read these few results, here's how to get to them. And then the discussion, just like you said, throw it out too. Because this is speculation. I think it maybe happened because of this. I think it happened because of that. Maybe this happened. Hell, I don't know.
Who knows?
Yeah.
But so don't read that shit. Exactly what you said. Read the
methods,
results.
Data.
You make your decision, boom, out.
Yeah.
By page two of your discussion, you're like, what else can I say about this shit?
You get the research, and you don't take, like you said, you don't take that one paper and be like, okay, that's it. I'm now going to take X.
Right.
Whoa.
Come on, athletes. Let's jump off the cliff.
That actually happens the most with supplements.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they're like, there's one study, and then they want to take, I mean, that's what I do. But
Well, you
took that liver, the lizard shit after that.
Yeah, I took and it works. But, you know.
Deer antler piss.
Yeah.
I read the study. Should I be taking deer antler? What?
Yeah, one or two studies doesn't really do it. We're talking about creatine earlier. There's been fucking hundreds, 700s, 1,000.
Creatine and caffeine.
Creatine and caffeine.
Caffeine, yeah.
Go to examine.com and go, oh, shit.
The numbers are in the tens of thousands on that. Tens of thousands.
There's a preponderance of evidence. We know what the fuck we're talking about when it comes to caffeine.
That's why I kind of roll my eyes when you said it. I'm like, do you really want to take time talking about this shit?
Because people are listening to journalists, and that's the problem.
Yeah, it's not for us. It's for
whoever
happens
dick.
To be listening.
Yeah, it's...
get off it.
Oh, it's probably time to wrap this show up. I think we could probably go on for hours.
Well, we will.
We're going to do
camera.
We'll do Blood Sopa and Barbara Buda tonight. We'll get the more alcohol going.
We're
going
to switch over to tequila if that's going to happen.
Corvette Summers tonight, man. We'll have a good fucking time.
I love Corvette Summers.
Oh, that's my signature cocktail.
All right, guys, make sure to go to Barbell. Wait, you know what? I'm gonna be a gentleman here.
What do you want to plug, Andy?
Andy, what do you want?
Well, I don't have an Instagram because I haven't been educated. Maybe I'll make one now.
He got berated when he showed up for not having one. You have a show on Fox?
Yeah, actually, by the time this airs, it'll be gone. But you guys can probably watch it. We filmed an episode of Countdown to the Octagon, so the preview for like the UFC events that they do.
Yeah.
We filmed it at my lab with some of the guys, portion of it, which aired on Fox yesterday, which was awesome. I got bombarded by the university, the PR media people. They're blowing up. Cause
they love you.
The Fox people told me, we'll count the viewership in the millions.
Pay me, motherfucker.
Yeah.
We're going to send you dozens more
people.
He didn't wear
a Barbell Shrug
shirt.
Did you guys see that, though?
I can't believe it.
If you guys caught that, I've been working with Kevin James for a while, like the actor.
Yeah. Oh, really?
And the last day, we filmed his last movie in Vegas. So I've been back and forth in Vegas for the last few months. Yeah. And I happened to be wearing my Barbell Shrug shirt. And we took like a last day photo. Mm-hmm.
Can you get Kevin on our podcast?
Yeah. He's awesome, man. He's tremendous. He's in Toronto with Adam Sandler in the next movie. But
bring him on. Let's
go. Can work it out.
get Adam Sandler. So Adam, how does training help you do whatever the fuck it is you do on camera? You call this shit movies. How does it help?
Kevin's crazy. You guys could get, because Kevin could have been a national or higher than national level weightlifter.
Really?
He's in his 50s. He overhead pressed, what was it, 280 for 20.
What?
What?
On a machine.
Kevin James.
On a machine.
All right, I mean,
but it's the hammer strength independent. Yeah. So it's
That's not
still heavy.
That's not weak.
That's a lot of
reps.
Kevin James is one of the strongest men in the fucking world.
He did the
Kolkov can't press like that'd be his number. Like
he did the
Kolkov like 20.
He did the independent
good.
Leg press 380 for 32 or something. I just said stop. He's unbelievable.
He played football, and
he's in his 50s. He wrestled a little bit.
Wow.
He's unbelievable.
Didn't see that one coming.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so
you
got that up there, but
yeah, the Fox Sports,
yeah, so
UFC,
we got that stuff on there.
The Octagon. What's it called? What's the show called again?
This one podcast. Was Come called on, Road to the Octagon.
Road to the Octagon. Yeah. All right, where can people find you on Twitter?
It's @DrAndyGalpin. So Dr. Andy Galpin, just DR.
And after we force you to do Instagram, what's your name going to be?
Oh, hopefully the same
probably
thing.
Probably keep it something like that. I don't know. You guys will have to tell me
what
to do.
It's tough if you don't have the same matching thing because Twitter doesn't like Instagram because they didn't let them buy them. And
I don't even have a phone that I can do that stuff on.
So anyways, we're going to get you an Instagram account after this. Hopefully it'll be the same thing. Maybe we'll link it on the show notes.
Actually, one last thing. I have had multiple people now contact me from the first couple episodes that watched this and are now going to be coming to school with us or that are doing projects with us. We have some people come in and visit the lab, bring their kids and stuff.
You're welcome.
That had 15-year-old kids interested in stuff. So I'm happy to do that stuff too. So if you guys are interested in maybe pursuing education, we do real applied cool science, but real applied stuff.
There's not a lot of people. There's not a lot of places in the United States where you can go and get a legit fucking sports science degree. This should be on your list. Like East Tennessee State.
I mean, we offered a degree in strength and conditioning. We have a master's degree in strength and conditioning. Like you said, I never in my life took a class in strength and conditioning. We have a bunch. Like, we teach graduate level, undergraduate level classes in strength and conditioning. So if that's what you're interested in.
Yeah, we get hit up a lot from people going, hey, should I go to school? Where should I go? You know, all this kind of stuff. And I'm like, a lot of times I'm like, you know what? It all depends on where you go to school. Sometimes school's not the right answer. Sometimes it is. And if you know you're going to do something like exercise science, kinesiology, this is one of those schools where you're going to be able to get a good education there. Not the schools with, and this probably goes with like every degree program there is. They're vastly different from school to school when it comes to kinesiology, exercise science. But we do know that at Cal State, it's good.
Cal State Fullerton. There's 26 Cal States.
Sorry.
Yeah, don't just go pick a random college like without visiting it. When we were thinking about doing our PhDs and we were traveling around to different universities, checking out the programs, some of them, you just were like, fuck, there's no
not
way.
Not to put too much pressure on it.
And don't, choose the university. Don't choose the university based on geography.
Oh, God.
Look at the programs,
can you
please
record that and play that in my class?
Oh, man.
Every one of my students. Oh, I want to go to school. I'm not leaving Orange County, though. Yeah. Great. I went to Memphis. Like, why did you ever leave and go to Memphis from Seattle?
Because all of us
these
were there at the same time. Like, read the list of people who were hanging out doing research in Memphis during those years.
Speaking
just fucking
of which,
putting in work.
Everyone that left that program and were hanging out at that time are all doing really cool things in strength and conditioning.
Guess who I saw last week?
Who'd you see?
The Panda Bear himself.
You saw Lauren Chu?
Lauren Chu.
What was Lauren
really
doing?
He was in Vegas. We hung out, had some cigars
and scotch.
I
haven't seen Dr. Chu.
Let me guess what he's doing in Vegas.
That was
put Lauren
conference
on the show.
Yeah. We do need Lauren on the show.
That dude's fantastic. He's very opinionated, which is awesome.
We should just talk about kettlebells.
I remember he used to get in such epic. He's the smartest guy I think I've ever met. This guy is just, he's like a Garhammer type. But he could have been a PhD in physics. For some reason, he dug lifting weights and whale things. He wanted to master.
Well, he came out here and got his PhD from
USC.
George Salem at USC. Yeah,
yeah, he's a master of biomechanics. This guy's brilliant as fuck. But I'm like the brash, fat, wide stance squatting powerlifter. He's the by-the-book, physics-based weightlifter. And we used to just hang out all the time. Like, we'd sit in the lab, drink Diet Code Red Mountain Dew, like, fucking by the case. Like, every day, you had to bring in.
By the book.
They're not nutritionists, physiologists.
Every day, you had to bring
in. Biomechanists.
We would go through a case of Diet Code Red every fucking day while we were sitting there slicing muscle tissue every day, man.
You have to, to keep you guys
in the fitness lab.
Yeah. Like, crushing
in the locker
room. And Dr. Schilling was no better. He drank that shit, too. Don't let him fool you. But I tried to get him to go down the tab route, because at the time, I was like, I had a mean addiction.
Dr. Schilling had 35 and changed everything.
Yeah.
I never heard a tab till you. You brought me to that.
Yeah. Tab, but if you want to have a problem, you start drinking tab, you're going to be fucking hooked.
Keep this perspective in mind. So when we got there, it was, you were diehard powerlifting. Lauren Chu was his opinionated everything. We're over here. And so it was just mutual hatred amongst everybody. These fucking powerlifters are so stupid. They don't know anything.
And we all train in the
bells.
Same weightlifting room.
Yeah. They're cheating. And then he's over there. Yeah, well, we're putting 1,000 pounds on our back. Eat shit. You know. And then all of a sudden, Mike was like, hey, I want to get into this CrossFit stuff. And we're like, what the fuck? And everybody hated you.
Everyone teamed up against me. They're like, that CrossFit thing is stupid. I was like, it's fun. Don't worry about it.
There's a lot of mutual love hatred going on there. Well, mostly hatred.
Things have come a long way since then. Can you fucking believe how popular Olympic weightlifting's gotten?
Yeah.
In this country, it's amazing.
Over 350 athletes at the American Open, like world record, I think, for weightlifting meets. And then the Nationals this year
we just broke
it again with like 500 athletes or something.
We hosted the largest ever local meet last spring here in my weightlifting club.
Yeah.
We had 182 registered lifters or something over 3 days. Just
and don't pretend I wasn't because of CrossFit. It was.
No,
that, you can talk all the shit.
No, I'm not talking to you. There's a lot of people out there.
If that's all they ever did, that was good. It means I will never talk shit about them ever. I mean, they reinvented weightlifting for us.
You know, without getting too far, pushing this podcast along too far, I get asked a lot about that. What do you think about CrossFit? You know, without going too far, I say that to the USA people, USAW people, I say the same thing. Like, we're not even, we've doubled in a few years. Like, you have a lot of people exercising a lot. They're trying really hard and they're changing a lot of their lifestyle. I've been on ESPN, probably 12 different episodes of different interviews about CrossFit, you know, pros and cons, hurting people, all that garbage. And I sound like this huge CrossFit like proponent. And in fact, I was on a radio show and a guy called in one time and said, we'd like to know what Dr. Galpin's affiliation with CrossFit officially is. And I said, none. I've actually literally never done it.
Yeah.
Like, I've never done CrossFit, never competed, never
Wait. That's a lie, because you did Fight Gone Bad once. And you
With Nizal.
You crushed it.
Yeah. We have pictures together. You and me.
He was like, I don't do any conditioning, just weightlifting. He came in and just fucking...
Well, my response to that
score
question
was phenomenal.
On live was, I've done a lot of push-ups. I've done a lot of burpees in my life. I've pressed barbells, thrown medicine balls. I guess I've never done CrossFit, done it my whole life.
Or maybe you did CrossFit your whole life and you didn't know it.
Right. And the basic argument is CrossFit's the name of a company, not an exercise program. But to come back to the, sort of the original point, it's done a lot. People are, this culture has moved forward. There's a lot of goofy shit that happens, and a lot of it, the socks. And
that's
the,
always, man. That's always.
Exactly.
Humans do goofy shit. That's what we do.
And so for the most part, if you weigh all the things and bad things, it's trying to do a lot of good things. Maybe the guy at the top's nice guy, maybe not nice guy. It doesn't matter. The movement is in generally
positive.
Pretty positive.
Yeah.
That's the only way I can respond. And a lot of people seem to enjoy it. They're liking it. How can you say what people like that's not harmful to others?
Soccer moms are snatching barbells.
Yeah, and you know the thing that we have to...
Very libertarian view of you.
Yeah, careful, we're in California. You know, you have to understand that, and I use your guys, in fact, I use your guys' gym on ESPN as the exact example, that every gym is run independently. So if you went to CrossFit South Bay, which I don't know, is that one maybe?
Probably. Just say
CrossFit,
X.
Fit Strong, Prepared, Faction, Mike Bledsoe. I don't know.
CrossFit, Jangles,
and you had a really bad experience, and maybe there were really underqualified people. That I totally believe it. That could absolutely happen. Go to the one 4 miles down the street, and it might be the best gym in the world.
Yeah.
And that might be also terrible. Go to the next one. And if you don't like it, don't do it.
Yeah.
You can't tell this company that...
You could say that about any personal training studio. It could be really shitty and then a block away, really good.
My exact example was, are there some really... Have you ever been to 24-hour... Well, I won't say it. Any other normal gym?
Just keep naming names.
There are some really, really unqualified people. Trust me, they're my students.
I'm trying my best.
They're so unqualified.
Yeah. I do a great time. It's the best school in the world for exercise science. My students are highly underqualified.
And then I've also
met some really
fantastic personal trainers. Some really tremendous ones. So why would we think that the CrossFit ones are any better or worse? You know, but I get asked that.
There's good and bad. Like, there's people getting hurt in yoga studios because doing stupid shit. No one's like, fucking, get rid of yoga.
There's good and bad doctors, good and bad chiropractors.
Welcome to humanity.
Dennis, whatever.
When I hear horror stories about CrossFit did this, I'm like, oh, I believe it. I believe it entirely.
Yeah.
And then when I hear tremendous stories about, you know, how many of your guys' people that are in there, whoever, non-athletes will say, I mean, they've had tremendous success. They've been there since day one or early on.
Yeah.
And I don't, I'm like, yeah, that probably happened too.
Yeah. It's
just like any other, you go to one auto shop, it's terrible. You go to the next one, it's fantastic. Four more, terrible. What? It's how you cannot think through that. I don't know.
True dat, homie. True dat.
Science.
All right. Make sure you go to barbellshrug.com, sign for the newsletter, check out the shop.
Everybody's got a bonus 35 minutes, by the way, after you say, we're wrapping it up, and no one.
Yeah. I'm really going to shut this down, because we got to go to the beach, the girls are waiting, and they're going to be pissed because they can't look at us. All right.
Yes.
Thanks for coming out.
Yeah, thanks, dude. And with some passion. I like it.
Yeah.
Peace.